leaders.
We pose the problems of human beings in their relations with the world.
Change.
GP made this one right here. You know it's a hit.
Impact.
Liberation is a praxis of action, team reflection upon the world.
Welcome to the pedagogy
Justice.
Of the obsessed.
This week, we continue our series on mentoring in conversation with Dr. Susan Moore Johnson, an academic powerhouse in her own right as the Jerome T. Murphy Research Professor in Education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. She has helped build the field of organizational change in education and studied the impact of structures such as unions on teachers and teaching as a profession. Dr. Moore Johnson is both a colleague and former student of David Cohen. In this episode, she connects her experiences of mentorship to that relationship. Listen as she shares the through lines of mentorship in both her career and to those to whom she passes the torch.
I'm Susan Moore Johnson. I'm currently a research professor, the Jerome T. Murphy Research Professor, and I emphasize that because Jerry, was my advisor, and he was the dean when I was academic dean. That means a lot to me. I have spent my entire academic career here at Harvard, but before that, I taught high school for 9 years. Because of that, I kind of see, apart from the issue of mentoring and where it fits in, I see my interest in education really having begun long, long before I thought about even leaving home. My dad was a high school English teacher. I remember as a kid spending time in his classroom. And then I had a high school English teacher who was also a speech coach, and I was very involved in competitive speech. He was essentially the person whose teaching I watched and learned from. And I often wonder whether I would have even gone into teaching, though I'd always said I wanted to be a teacher. I often wonder whether I would have done it if I hadn't seen him. Just about week and a half ago, I spoke at his memorial service, and I had some quotes that people from my class had written about him on, you know, a class reunion website that continues. And I was really astonished at how many people said he had changed their lives and how they hear him as they do their work and aspire to be as thoughtful as he was. He was just really unusual. He is my sense of the ideal. So I left Ohio to go to college, nothing my family ever thought I would do, and then ended up here at Harvard doing an MAT program. In fact, Kay was in my same cohort. There was a way in which I know that this individual's influence was really powerful, and he never told me to be a teacher. I mean, it was nothing as direct as that, and I guess that is part of what I have learned about mentoring. It's not necessarily a deliberate effort to have someone do what you do as you do it. People, in their own way, grab at pieces of what someone can provide. When I started graduate school here, I had been teaching for 9 years, and I was in a program that was preparing administrators, and I thought I wanted to be a superintendent. There was a teacher leadership role in the high school that I taught in, where there were four of us who had half-time jobs as administrators, and I had responsibility for 200 students. The principal of the school kind of pulled us all in. We were part of the cabinet. So I realized that I was very interested in schools as organizations. I wouldn't have said it that way, but I was eager to try to understand how to go beyond what I was doing in my classroom. But I was also really tired. There is nothing that makes you more tired than teaching for 9 years. I took a course that was a seminar that David and Sarah Lance Lightfoot, who was newly appointed, taught. And it was about teaching. And it was a small seminar, relatively small seminar. And it was a little unnerving because it wasn't quite clear what the course was or what was supposed to happen. And David, I think at that time, may have seemed more intimidating than he does now. I think he actually was, but that may be a matter of perspective. And what I learned from that experience was more about myself than ideas. I mean, there were very interesting ideas, but he was interested in the fact that I had been a teacher and that I thought about teaching. I had this sense that for the first time as a student here, the work I had done as a teacher was not marginal or beyond the bounds of what was important. I don't even remember what the content mm-hmm. of those courses really was. That was kind of how I encountered David then. He was running with Tony Breich at that point, a research and development kind of shop. And I never got involved in that. So I never watched him do research. I never collaborated with him on research. Jerry Murphy, on the other hand, taught me how to do qualitative research. And he had a course in it that was about qualitative policy research, which had I realized at the time, I would have probably spent more time on it than I even did, because nobody else has really thought about it as much as he had at that time. When I look back, David made things available and possible for me. And it wasn't like he said, here, I have a plan for you at all. But for example, he and Jerry Murphy had received a $400,000 grant from the Ford Foundation. It was a one-page proposal. So this was another time. And $400,000 was a lot of money then, in the late 70s. And they had written this text, you know, it was like a long paragraph, what they would do there. And one of the things was about unions and collective bargaining. And I had had this terrific professor, David Keekley, here, who was a lawyer, and he used case teaching. He'd been at the business school. And he taught me all about collective bargaining and unions, and I wrote my qualifying paper about performance-based layoffs. And I saw this letter, and I said, who's going to do this work about collective bargaining and unions? And David said, I don't know. Do you want to do it? Well, yes, of course. I'm not sure. I doubt that he has any recollection of that. I don't, you know, but there was some sense of confidence that I felt from him that I would do a good job. And so that research was for my dissertation, and Jerry was my advisor. David was on the committee. So he would give me feedback along the way about that. David was Jerry's advisor. Jerry said, David always reads something and you think you know what it's about, and then he tells you it's four levels up from what you thought. And I always remember thinking that. Yeah. Okay, I get that. David was chair of the department then, and this job description came out. And at that time, I know much more about how jobs evolve and descriptions are written and who approves what. But at the time, it just seemed like this job description was really interesting, and it was for a study of schools as organizations. And I had gotten very interested in the organization's literature. I thought, oh, okay, I could do that. Now, whether he saw any relationship between what, I mean, I'm sure he said apply, because I probably wouldn't have. I would have thought it was for outside people. Not too long after that, he left for Michigan. It's been more in the last 10 years that the work that we do is more connected. What I want to emphasize is how much happenstance is involved in this. There was a leadership center that Lee Bowman, Terry Deal, Jerry Murphy were involved in. Carol Weiss was a key person here. And we were writing the proposal. It's one of these things where the proposal was being written a week before it was due, and we were full of ideas. So we created these streams. One had to do with teacher leadership, one had to do with school-based leadership, one had to do with superintendents and district leadership. And at that point, I was kind of interested in the district side of it. And I said, I'll write up the superintendents one. And I made this thing up at night about following 12 newly appointed superintendents and trying to get at this notion of leadership and what it was about. And I spent the next 7 years on that project. The thing about mentoring, I was participating on a panel at a Spencer Fellows postdoc and pre-doc meeting a few weeks ago, and I was supposed to talk about mentoring. Mm-hmm. It's very different to think about mentoring from the perspective of the person who's seeking support, and that's very different from the person who's offering support. And that there's a kind of career shift that happens when someone has finished their degree, where they often are working for an advisor on a collaborative project with the understanding they get publications out of it. That's very different than what my experience was. Mm-hmm. But many of these Spencer Fellows were in the process of shifting from, I'll do whatever I'm told and I'll hope mm-hmm. to learn. And some people thought they had great mentoring and some people thought that they were being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. But then they're shifting into academic roles, all these people. They haven't really thought through what's expected of them by mm-hmm. by their students that they'll have. My daughter was 30 years old, graduating from college, and thinking about what she might do and kind of deliberately planning not to teach. So that interested me. But then she ended up joining Teacher America because there wasn't anything else she really wanted to do. And so that seemed to me such an interesting time. There was, when I say I might not have been a teacher, I'm totally ignoring all the social forces that essentially were closing off options for me. And now my daughter was in the midst of interviewing with, you know, finance companies and whatever, banks and consulting agencies and things I would never have thought of. So I thought, all right, she's starting to teach, and this is a very interesting time for the labor market has changed, social expectations have changed. What are schools going to do when they can't get this automatic supply of women and of men of color who historically have teachers? That was kind of the beginning of it, and I had to think very carefully, though I didn't do it in advance, I was doing it as a, what's my role in these people's careers, in their work, in their research? I promised collaboration, but I didn't really know what that was going to mean. Mm-hmm. I'd had in my head a whole territory. I'd actually, in a book, Teachers at Work, I had written about conceptually what's in the teacher's workplace. There are political elements, economic, all kinds of pieces. And I knew that I would not have time in my lifetime to study all the parts of it. And I really wanted to get that whole picture. So in part, that was behind this. I thought, okay, if I can work with successive groups of doctoral students, we could do a lot of really interesting work. I was advising people about things that I didn't really know very much about. Mm-hmm. Students would come and say, oh, I want a woman advisor, or I want to do qualitative work. But the substance of what they were doing was not something I knew much about. Mm-hmm. So I could read any draft and tell them whether it made sense. Is there a good argument? Do you have, you know? But it always felt like it was marginal. It was part of my job, and I took it seriously. But as far as whether it was always interesting to me or connected to my research, that wasn't the case. I'll start this project, and then there will be that opportunity to have more convergence of these things. That was 20 years ago, and we're just finishing the last of that work. I learned when I had a retirement party that I was really called Susan Moore Work. And, you know, I think people knew what they were getting into because I had taught. I didn't ever take anyone I hadn't taught. The other thing is, though, that I quickly realized that you have to be fairly generous about ideas. When you're working that closely with people, you have to just agree that we're making this the best we can. What was great about the project was not just that I had a relationship with these people, but they had very good relationships among them in making things work. I would hope is that they got some good ideas from me, they had some good experiences, but they understood that the sources of what they would know and do come from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll say about mentoring is that we learned pretty quickly. That was a time in around 2000, 98, 2004, when everybody believed that the answer to teacher turnover, attrition, was to provide a mentor for every new teacher. And logistically, it turned out pretty badly. Most people didn't have the mentors they were promised, or they taught a different subject or a different grade or in a different school.
Or four hours a year.
Right. Right.
Once
there
a quarter.
no time allocated for training or for observing or anything. So on the other hand, even when some of that was provided, the presumption that you would match one person with, you know, one new teacher and that some magic would happen, which is what everyone hoped. And so there were very, very few programs where mentoring worked well, and those were usually embedded in schools that had many other kinds of supports. And there's research that shows that, but we just learned it from all these people. In some ways, when people had very attentive mentors, they actually didn't have very good relationships or much relationship with other teachers. What she found was that people were more satisfied with their work when they were quickly engaged in what she called an integrated professional culture, where they had ongoing relationships with people of different levels of experience. And that continues to be very clear. One-to-one mentoring is probably not a very good idea institutionally. Better off to have
as a structure,
a team. Yeah.
And it seems like that's what you tried to build within your project
right.
team as well.
Right. Yeah, I think it was. To the extent that I would advise new teachers, I would say, you're driving this situation, and you know what you need, and you'll get certain things, some opportunities open from one person, some good critique from another, some good modeling from another, close collaborative work on a curriculum or something from someone else, and that you ought to direct that yourself, because no individual's really going to be able to do that.
What makes someone a good mentee?
Well, I think you have to be pretty self-sufficient in an ironic sort of way, which doesn't mean that you're just opportunistic, but it does mean that you know who you are. You know what works for you. You know what you need if you're honest with yourself. And you're attentive to where you can find that. From the perspective of the person who's developing, let's say, I just do think that you cannot see yourself as being dependent on one person. And so working with a really grand, historically known, you know, profound character as a mentor could really slow you down. I think it's odd because I know that there are opportunities or messages that people pick up that may never have been deliberate, but or not consciously deliberate, if that's not a redundancy. People believe mentoring is this very deliberate, purposeful, giving yourself over to this relationship. And I think actually, if you track people's careers, that's not the way it happens. Clearly, being passive is not going to work.
What advice do you have for those who are doing the work of improving schools?
In a simple way, I think it has to be school-based. I understand the instructional core very much. I spent a lot of time thinking and writing about that. The key to understanding how you move that out is in the school. It's not in the district. The district can support what happens in schools, make it difficult, but from the teacher's perspective, and that is as close as you get to the instructional core, what happens in the school is what matters. I think that often gets missed, particularly by people who are looking at district leadership. So I've been really interested in places like Baltimore under Andres Alonso and the Lawrence Public Schools under Jeff Riley, where their strategies were similar. They were pushing decision-making to the schools. That is admirable and really difficult to make work because you can end up letting people go without feeling supported. If we really expect principals to be instructional leaders, then my view, it's not always a popular one, is they better have been really good in instructors, because there's no way that they can actually generate the kind of attention to instruction that is needed. Right now, I've interviewed so many really fine teachers who are adamant they would never be administrators. No. And that's kind of really sad to think that they could be really influential in this broader process of educating kids over time. But they see it as leaving the real work. Mm-hmm. And I think, I really think that a lot could be done to change the pathway, to change the responsibilities, so that in fact instructional leaders actually could do instructional leadership, which is more than supervising teachers in classrooms. It's bigger than that.
We pose the problems of human beings in their relations with the world. Knowledge emerges only through invention and reinvention, through the restless and patient continuing, hopeful inquiry human beings pursue in the world, with the world, and with each other. The solution is not to integrate them into the structure of oppression, but to transform that structure so that they become beings for themselves. Liberation is a praxis of action and reflection upon the world.